Hi, thanks for being here. I'm Milton Jones, and I wear orange. And if you weren't here yesterday, orange is the color of hope for AIDS orphans in sub-Saharan Africa, and they asked me to wear orange for all these kids, so I said I'd do it. And so I wear orange every day to hopefully have hope for all these kids that are suffering of AIDS and needing some help over there. So orange is the color of hope, and I wear orange, but I still went to Texas Tech University and support the Red Raiders. But I'm so glad you're here. We're calling this When Helping Helps. There's a book that's real popular called When Helping Hurts. I don't really like that book. Some of y'all love it probably, but I don't really like it. I think it's caused a lot of damage because people think they're hurting people today. And I get a call every day saying, well, I really wanted to help you at Christian Relief Fund, but I don't want to hurt anybody. And I'm thinking, well, you don't have to hurt anybody. You can help people. And so what we're learning is how helping helps. Yesterday I was recommending to everybody to read Bill Gates' annual report, 2014 report, and he's showing how over and over and over again in the worst places in the world, things are getting better because people are helping. And he says what's bothering him is all this negative stuff. And some of it's coming from churches, he says. All this negative stuff saying we're hurting people. And he said when we're drastically changing the world in a good way, and we need to find out what's working and continue in that. Also, I recommended you reading yesterday a book called More Than Good Intentions by Carlin and Apple. Come on in. And Carlin won the Nobel Prize in Economics. And his book's the same thing, showing that we are really doing some good stuff right now that's changing the world. And all these people are kind of blasting, saying we're doing all this hurting stuff. And he said, basically, all you got to do is this. This is the Nobel Prize economic guy. He says, you got to do this. Go over there and see what works and do it. Go over there and see what doesn't work and don't do it. He said, but there are just so many good things happening right now, and we need to do that. And then a guy named Bruce Idick did the most extensive research project on what really brings relief long term. And you know, because there's a lot of things we do to help people, but what is it that brings relief long term? And I was telling the guys yesterday, I got a different group here today, but that means it must have been boring yesterday and they didn't come back or something. But anyhow, I always get scared when somebody comes out with a definitive report that basically deals with what I do. You know, you think, oh no, this report's going to come out, and at the end of the report, it's going to say you should do something different, or what I do doesn't work. But what they said is, after studying everything that you could study, they said the number one thing to bring long-term relief was child sponsorship programs. There was nothing they could find that brought relief more. And that's what Christian Relief Fund does. We do all kinds of things. I'll talk about other things we do today. But we sponsor children in about 30 different countries. Imogene helps us sponsor kids in Romania. And some of you, you know, go to Randy's church. And man, I know they sponsor kids every place. And I'll tell about some other things they do there. But, you know, these kids, just for $1 a day, you can have a kid that is going to die. But these kids right here, for $1 a day, they'll get to go to school, they'll get fed, they'll get educated. If they're HIV positive, they'll get antiretrovirals and will not get AIDS. I mean, we can do that now. We give antiretrovirals, you're HIV positive, you don't get AIDS. And these kids will get housing, they'll get taken care of, and they'll grow up loving Jesus. $1 a day.
How can that be? How do you do all that with a dollar?
Well, it just doesn't cost much to live where they are. And then we don't pay Americans over there to take care of them. We use native people over there, you know, and so we empower people, and people are getting a good economic means that they're getting for taking care of these kids. And so, you just go over there and see it. It's amazing what is happening. But you hear so much about Africa, you know, we're hurting Africa. Well, Africa's economy is just about to boom. In the next by 2050, they're predicting that their economy will be better than the United States.
Why?
Well, I'm going to tell you, it's because the world has got to produce things. And the United States is not going to produce things. right now, if you look in the last couple of decades, where's the production been happening? India, China. They're basically, but what is happening there, their economy is getting more like the United States economy. Prices are getting higher. It costs more to employ people. So there's got to be the next place. It's got to be the next place. And what will be required is people living in a place where it does not cost much to live, so you don't have to pay them, and still they can work on that economy, and the people have to be very educated. What are we doing? We're educating all these kids. We've got this whole force of kids that are being educated. Like yesterday, I told the story of Oscar Amandi. He's one of the kids that got sponsored. Smartest kid in the history of Kenya as far as on achievement tests. Being supported by a seamstress from Seattle for $1 a day. And we're supporting all of these kids. And so you've got the future workforce that's going to be producing the stuff in the world. And pretty soon, all this poverty there, it's just going to turn over. They're going to have jobs, and then they're going to know Christ. All these kids are being taught Christ. Those kids get taught about Jesus every single day of the week. Every single day. And they're growing up loving Jesus. And right now, if you're from the Church of Christ background, we have more Churches of Christ in Africa than we do in the United States. Chris Flanders was of the Missions Department here, was in our class yesterday and said, yeah, we got a lot more. And it's these kids, you know, that we're helping. So that's the number one thing. And so I'll talk about the number two today, and that's very different. I'll tell you, let's move to a different place. Let's move to Haiti. And I was in Benjamin, Haiti, and encountered a bunch of these kids. And these kids here, they're called Zero Children. Zero Children. And Benjamin, Haiti is full of zero children. And that is because a family in poverty in that part of Haiti, when they just can't pay their bills, when they can't eat enough, what they do is they pick a child. And they label that child the zero child. And then they no longer feed that child. They no longer pay attention to that child. And that child ultimately just has to leave, because the family doesn't take care of that child anymore. And it produces a different kind of orphan that we call their zero children. And so in Benjamin, Haiti, we decided that we'd start a work dealing with zero children. And we have all of these zero children. So we started that. And years ago, there was a church in St. Louis, McKnight Road Church of Christ. And the McKnight Road Church of Christ, they drilled a water well for us. And so all these zero children that we're now taking care of, they get educated, they get fed. It's just a beautiful place now for these zero children. And so anyhow, I was over there, and they said, we've got a problem. And I said, what? And I said, well, our well's not working. So I went to the well that was drilled by McKnight Road Church of Christ, and I started pumping on the thing. Water didn't come out. And I said, well, what's your alternative here? So I got this whole village here. And everybody was dependent upon the water that was drilled by McKnight Road Church of Christ. And I said, well, where do you get your water? And I said, well, come on with me. So we start taking this hike kind of through the woods, and we go, and we finally come to this place, and there's this hole in the ground. I mean, it's about this wide, about that long, and about this deep. And there's this long line of people. And everyone's got a little bucket. And so they look down there, and then every 5 or 10 minutes, about water, about that deep, comes up out of this little hole. And they'll take their bucket, and then they'll leave. And there's this line of just, you know, dozens and dozens of people just waiting in line for just a little, not even enough to fill a bucket, that comes every 5 or 10 minutes. And I said, well, where's the other water? And I said, that's all we've got left here. So they've got a whole little village, town here, all dependent upon waiting there for every 5 or 10 minutes, some water coming up. And I said, well, this isn't going to work. I said, everybody's going to die of thirst here. And they says, yeah, we know. So we got a solution. And I said, what is it? So they took me to this other place, real close to where all the zero children are kept. And there was this big hole. And they started digging this hole. And this hole is to be a water well. And they were digging this hole by hand. And zero children were getting in this hole. And when I got to this hole, we measured how deep it was. You know how deep the hole was? 150 feet. And what they did, they had a little stick that they put across this thing and had some little flimsy rope. And they just go down the rope and dig some more and bring the dirt up. And they were down to 150 feet and they still didn't have water. And they still got kids, zero children, going down there. The director, our CRF director, when it was 40 feet, fell in, broke both legs. And I'm telling them, I'm saying, you can't do this. I mean, they don't have this thing covered. I mean, we got all these children, these CRF children running around. They got this big 150 feet hole here that's not even covered. And I said, you can't do this. This is too dangerous. You can't send children down this hole. You just can't do this. And so, did they listen to me? No. Why? They don't have water. And they're going to keep going down the hole until they get water, because if they don't, they're going to die. And that's Benjamin Haiti. And that's kind of the situation that we're dealing with there.
Still
and, huh? No, we got water. There, it took a little while, but we got water. We hired a water drilling company to come in there, and it was very expensive because there's no water well drills. I thought, we can't do this anymore, you know. So we paid a bunch of money and drilled a well.
Had the first well just broken, or what?
Yeah, it just ran out of water, and they drilled and we drilled four other wells. Some other groups had come in there and drilled four wells, and they're all dry holes. And what happened is sometimes we just don't think, and they drill these dry holes, and they say, well, you know, it's a dry hole, we tried real hard, and go on, and people don't realize, you can't stop. Just because you hit a dry hole in a place that doesn't have water, they still need water. You got to keep going until you find some kind of solution. And what had happened there is people drilled the wells and then hit dry holes, and they just left. And so they started digging and digging. And so we came back and we said, we're drilling until we hit something.
In that hole, yeah.
And so we finally got water out of that hole. And it was kind of funny because they were only about 30 feet away from water. And so it was about 180 feet we finally got some water. But Jesus says this. He says, if anyone gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones, who's my disciple, truly I tell you, that person will certainly not lose their reward. And I wonder if Jesus really meant that. You know, sometimes I read that, and I didn't take it literally. I started looking at those pictures of those zero children. You know, and I'm wondering if Jesus, in his foresight, wasn't envisioning some of those zero children giving water. And sometimes you'll spiritualize this, you know, giving water, and you'll say, you know, we're giving them, you know, heavenly water or something like this. No, I think Jesus is probably talking about water. And he's saying, maybe we should help the little kids that don't have any water. You think in this world, who's rich? And, you know, I live most of my life in Seattle, and so when we'd say who's rich, we'd always say Bill Gates is rich, you know. And he was. We always tried to get him to go into church and tithe. But,
you'd only have to do it once.
I know. I'd only have to do it once. That's true. But now when you talk about people who are rich, you know who I think of now? Anyone who's got water. They're rich. According to this world standards, if you got some water that's not going to kill you, you're pretty rich. Yesterday, some of you are here, and I was showing you this treatment center we got for HIV/AIDS that was there in the place Kisumu, Kenya, the most diseased place on the planet. And Christian Relief Fund, we started a place to help people with HIV, and we distribute antiretrovirals so they won't get AIDS, and we take care of a lot of diseases there. But I remember when I first went there, and I said, man, you need a clinic, because here it was. You had hundreds of thousands of people in the most diseased place on the planet, and there was not one clinic or hospital there. Now, wouldn't you think in the world we would say, where is the most diseased place in the world? Let's start a clinic and a hospital there. And yet, in that place, there was not one. And so I thought, might be a good place to build one. So we decided to build one. So I get plans drawn up, you know, we're going to build this clinic that y'all saw yesterday. And I remember, we're already breaking ground. I mean, and one of the guys that's going to help run the clinic, he comes up to me one day and he says, "Hey, I had a question. I just need to ask you before we finish this thing off." And I said, "What's that?" And he says, "Do you think we're going to need water here?" And I said, "Yeah, I think so. We're building a clinic here to treat sick people." And I said, "I think we'll need water." And he says, "Well, you do know there's no water here." And I said, "There's no water here?" You know, and I'm sitting here drinking out of my plastic water. I keep carrying with me places I go. And all these other people, they don't have water. And drinking this little water that flows down the ditch that's dirty, that's got all kinds of junk in it, you know. And that's what they're drinking. And I'm sitting here oblivious that they don't have water. Isn't that amazing? They just didn't have water. And
that was in India?
No, that was in Kenya. And so, you know what? If you travel around the world, you'll see places and you'll stop and you'll see these women that are carrying these big jars of water on their head. And when you see them, you know what I tend to do? I don't do this anymore, but I've tended most of my life, when I see women carrying water, I will stop and take their picture. And whoever I'm with, I'll say, "Can you believe they can carry that water?" See, one of these full of water, about 40 pounds. Okay? 40 pounds on their head. Well, they lift it up. They lift it up and they put it on their heads. And most of them can walk with that water without even using their hands. And then there's this little, that's a girl in the back because they have their hair real short. And you'll notice, what gender are they? Women. Okay, do you know why more women, little girls, don't go to school in this world? But the number one reason little girls don't go to school?
Because they have to carry water.
The reason they don't go to school, this little girl, she won't go to school because she is going to start carrying water. And in this place where these are in Kenya, they are going to have to travel 8 hours a day carrying water, 40 pounds of water on top of their head, walking. They're going to have to go down roads where all kinds of guys know where they travel alone. Dangerous places. And these little girls all over the world in third world countries, the number one reason they will not go to school is because they are going to spend their whole life carrying water. I mean, it's just true. That's just the way it is. That's the way their life is. They are going to spend their life carrying water.
Is Kenya like in a bad drought right now? I had read somewhere that there wasn't, in lots of places, there wasn't even enough water to baptize or somebody.
Yeah, I'll tell you about the drought there. And I got it later on in my notes here, and I'll get to that. That very question there. But if, let's say, like, what if you had a jumbo jet? What if you had a jumbo jet crash? You think that would make our news? Doesn't every time a jumbo jet crashes, it makes front page, right? What if you had a jumbo jet crash that was all full of children?
Wouldn't stand up for that very long.
Now, yeah, I mean, like, what if that happened? I mean, would that make the news? Would you be upset? Would you notice it? What if you had one full of children crash every 4 hours? That's how many children die from a lack of clean water right now. The equivalency of a jumbo jet full of children crashing every 4 hours.
Is that worldwide?
No, that's just worldwide, yeah. And so that's what it is, but it doesn't get our attention. We're not upset that all these people are dying of water. Half of the hospital beds in the world are filled because the person there has some water-related disease. And it's just amazing. And you think about those women there carrying those, they're going to go down and they're going to get some water. and they're going to get some water, and they're going to get that water in there. And if they don't go get that water and fill those up and walk those 8 hours a day to get that water, they're going to die, right? But in most places, if they get that water and drink it, it's a Trojan horse. The water is so full of parasites that that water is going to kill them.
And on top of that, they have to cook and take care of children. That's not their only job.
Yeah. Okay, well, look at this. If here in America, we drink a lot of bottled water, right? Let's take 3 bottles of water here. If we took the amount of money that we spend on bottled water and just reduced it to where we're drinking 2 of those 3 and putting the money on the 3rd one to help bring water to people who did not have it, we would have enough money from just the United States drinking 2 bottled waters instead of 1 if we gave that. It doesn't cost really that much to bring clean water to the whole world. We're just not doing it. Okay, Bruce Wydick in his study, what helps people long term in relieving global poverty? Number one, he found the most effective thing he found was child sponsorship. Number 2, bringing clean water. He said, if you're going to do 2 things. And when we heard that at Christian Relief Fund, we said, well, we may do a whole lot of things, but we're going to do those 2 things. We're going to sponsor children, and we're going to bring clean water. Because those are the 2 most effective things in helping people long term is water. So let me tell you a story. And it's a good story. I think you'll like it. This is that story here by Bruce Wydick. It's first published by the BBC, and then Christianity Today produced kind of an edited version of it because they liked it. It could have been a different conclusion; they might not have. But that's the 2 most effective ways to alleviate poverty. Okay, there's a place called Turkana. And in the Horn of Africa, and there's about 12.5 million people up there in the northwest part of the country of Kenya, and in the south part of Somalia, and the southern part of Ethiopia. And you can draw a circle around that, and there's 12.5 million people up there who don't have water right now. It is maybe the worst famine in the history of the world. It has not rained there in 6.5 years.
Six and a half years.
It has not rained a drop in that area. So people say, well, what do, you know, when they don't have water, you know, in 6.5 years? Well, they die. That's what they do. They just die. There is some water. You know, you're talking about water. You can't baptize people in a lake. I've baptized a lot of people in this one lake there, but we call it the Lake of Death. Because if you drink the water, you die. But it was okay for baptisms. Kind of reminded me of Romans 6, you know, where you're dying to yourself and coming to new life. But we baptize people in the Lake of Death. But there's no drinking water. 6.5 years it has not rained there. So we decided that we would start helping in that area. At first we were helping a place called Dadaab. And if you heard of Dadaab, Dadaab is the largest refugee camp in the world. And people from Somalia didn't have water and food. And so UN, CRF, others were trying to take food into Somalia through Kenya for all these people that were starving to death in this famine. Well, the Al-Shabaab, which are akin to Al-Qaeda, they're right there at the border and they would not let anybody come in. And so all the relief workers, they would try to kill them if they tried to bring food in. So the people were still starving, so they decided that they would leave Somalia to try to get to the food that's in Kenya. And so when they started leaving, the Al-Shabaab would kill their own people who tried to escape to get the food and water. But the people said, we're dying anyway, so they just kept coming and kept coming because they heard that there was this place called Dadaab. And Dadaab was built for 30,000 people, a big refugee camp. By the time most people got there, there were already over 600,000 people at Dadaab. And so we were trying to bring in food and water, and then the Al-Shabaab started putting landmines in the road so to blow up our trucks that would come in to try to bring food and water. So we kind of moved over to west of there to a place called Turkana, which was just as bad, but there weren't as many landmines. And so we started drilling some water wells there. And It's just a big, big desert right now because they didn't have any water. And I remember I was driving along, and here's a road, and pretty soon this road ends, and you're just driving around down the middle of nowhere. And it's kind of cool because you can drive 120 miles an hour. It doesn't matter. You can just drive, you know. It's great. And you don't really see much of anything. You see a lot of camels you'll see there. And as we're driving along and driving along and driving along, because we've drilled a well out there, and I want to see the well that we drilled. And so we're driving along, and man, you're not seeing anything. And then as I looked on the horizon, I started seeing some colors there. And I thought, well, maybe it's a mirage or maybe it is something. And so I got closer, and look, all those people were there, just in the middle of the desert. And they were just out there, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, it looks like hundreds, thousands. I don't know how many people are there, you know. But hundreds of people, they're out there in the middle of nowhere where we drilled this well. And so I'm kind of excited. It seems like a cool thing that we drilled this. What's that?
Do they obviously have to wait in line?
Oh yeah, 24 hours a day. And a well out there, you know, it'll go 24 hours a day. There will not be a moment. Everybody's standing in line. But we drilled this well, and there we are drilling a well out there in the middle of Turkana. And so when I got there, what color did I wear?
Orange.
Okay. They had heard in the middle of the desert I wore this orange. So they put this orange ribbon on the well, and they wouldn't pump on it till I got there. They wanted me to be the first. And I said, oh, man, I cannot believe they waited on me. And so I get there, and they got this orange ribbon. Where they found an orange ribbon? Who knows? So anyhow, they have some kind of knife, you know. And so I'm supposed to cut the thing and be the first one to pump on it. So I cut that thing, and I start pumping on the thing. And I pump, and I pump, and I pump. No water comes out. And you know, when I got out of the truck there, this Land Cruiser, they introduced me. He says, "This is Milton Jones from Christian Relief Fund. He brings water to the desert." And I sit there pumping, and I thought, these guys are guys that kill lions with knives, okay? That are out there. And I'm thinking, I'm going to be introduced in just a minute as Milton Jones, the guy who doesn't bring water to the desert. But I might be in big trouble here. So I told the guy that had drilled the well, I said, "There's something wrong here. We've got to find out soon." So we start pulling out rods out of that thing. I mean, this thing is, I don't know, it's probably 600 feet deep. Who knows? No, it's not that much. Maybe 500. And so we're pulling these rods out of there. So we get to one rod, and I'm saying, "This one looks bad." I mean, I don't really know what I'm doing. But I said, "This looks bad." And the drill says, "Yeah, it does look bad." I says, "Can you get another one?" He says, "It'll take me 3 hours." And I said, "Go do it." I said, "I'll stall." And so anyhow, he goes off, you know, and these Turkana people, they love to talk. And I said, "You know what? This is such a fabulous occasion. We need to make some speeches." So I'm trying to get 3 hours worth of speeches going on here, you know. And we also had a truck full of food, so we're passing out the food. And so everybody's making speeches there. And then sure enough, he comes back about 3 hours, and we put it all back together and put it down there. And I start pumping and pumping and pumping, and water comes out. I mean, I could not believe it. Water comes out of this thing. And I was pretty ecstatic that the water came out of there. And here's some of the people that were pretty excited about the water being there. And so it was funny because I had these kind of cargo pants with me. And it was all about this one. And so I grabbed this Bible just because it was the right size. And then when I pulled it out, I realized this is actually the golfer's Bible. Playing with Purpose, New Testament for Golfers. You know, and it's kind of a weird one to pull out in the middle of the desert, the golfing Bible. But it's actually the contemporary English version. And right when that water hit there, I thought of Psalms 107. And I had this Bible with me. And I thought of Psalms 107. And see if it doesn't fit. I think it was the perfect choice. Psalms 107. Look what it says. "Some of you were lost in the scorching desert, far away from a town. You were hungry and thirsty and about to give up. You were in serious trouble. But you prayed to the Lord and He rescued you. Right away, He brought you to a town. You should praise the Lord for His love and for the wonderful things He does for us. To everyone who is thirsty, He gives something to drink. To everyone who is hungry, He gives good things to eat." And then I read from verse 35, "But the Lord can also turn deserts into lakes and scorched land into flowing streams. And so I yelled at these people. I says, do you know what kind of God you have? And you know, they're just, what kind of God do we have? I says, you have a God who brings water into the desert. And when I said that, I had a little translator too. And when I said that, the people started jumping up and down. And just jumping up and down and just kind of screaming screams of joy. Just jumped up and down and up and down. And I don't know how long. It seemed like 30 minutes to me. They just kept jumping up and down and jumping up and down. And I thought, when's the last time I jumped up and down? Because I was so happy because I had a drink. I'm so spoiled. And they just couldn't stop jumping up and down, screaming for joy, because they had water in this place. And you know, it doesn't cost that much. It costs a little bit, you know, to drill a well, but you can do it. Your church can do it. Randy and his church and Bernie, they've just paid for a couple of wells, and I think he said he's going to send a check to drill some more. It used to cost us $20,000 to drill that well, and then a guy that's the chairman of the board of Texas Tech, he brought us our own rig, and so we can do them for half that, for $10,000 now. And that $10,000 is a lot of money, but $10,000 to bring life? I mean, you know, that's a used car. But for there, it's a whole village. But that's not the end of the story. Because let me tell you what's going to happen with the well Randy's church is going to drill. Because a little cycle happened. And at first I didn't get it. But a little cycle starts happening. Because after I drilled that well, the chief came up to me and he made me an elder in the tribe. That's why I have these on, because I'm an elder in that tribe. And he said, since you're an elder in our tribe, we want to give you land. So they gave me a great plot of land. He said, where would you like your land? And I said, I'd like my land right here close to this water. And he said, okay, you can have land any place you want it, because you're an elder in our tribe. I said, great, thank you, chief. And so had this land here. And I told the people, I said, you know what I want to do with my land? And they said, what? I said, I'm going to start a farm. They said, really? Yeah, we'll start a farm. We'll grow something here. Because we've got water, we can start a farm here. And I said, the only problem is, I don't live here. I said, so I need to hire some farmers. Would anybody here like to farm my land? I'm going to bring some seeds in here. We've got water. Would anybody here like to farm my land? Yeah, I will. So now we've got some water here. Now we've got a farm here. Now we've got a little economy here. We've got some people employed. Because I told them, I'm going to pay you the food that comes from this land. So, got a little economy going here. And so,
what will grow then?
Well, we're hoping that some corn's going to grow there. We've got some fruits going to grow there. Some things that are native there. But the main thing they want to grow there is corn. And they make all kinds of stuff from corn. If they got corn, they're in business. And so there's my little, that's my land. And that's the start of my farm there. Pretty soon we got all kinds of crops that are growing there. And you start seeing that little water on that land, things will grow. And so the chief, he pulls me aside. We start walking. And here's what the chief says. He says, this Christianity is very good. So he knew where it came from. He said, this Christianity is very good. And he said something I'll never forget. He said, do you think all my people should become Christians? And I said, that's not a bad idea. You know. And he says, and I said, you know what you need, chief? And he said, what? I says, you need a church. And he said, I guess we do. And I said, we're going to plant a church here. So we planted a church. And we got one of the guys there that was one of the other elders there, and we told him he was going to be the preacher of the church, and he'd become a Christian here recently, you know, and so he's going to be the preacher of the church. And so we got a little training place there to kind of, because these guys don't know anything, and so it's kind of, you know, we figure it'll take them a couple of days to be teaching heresy, so we're trying to teach them some truth there. So we got a guy, an evangelist, his name's Markson. So Markson comes around and he's kind of like the Apostle Paul. He plants the churches and he teaches the people to try to make sure they're teaching some truth to the people, preaching the gospel. And so we start this church here, and I think here I am preaching at church. And that's me in my African shirt that's orange. And I'm preaching. That was our church that we started there. After we drilled a well, started a farm, and then we started this church here. And preaching on that day, after I finished preaching, we walked down to the river of death, and baptized 30 people on that first day. It's kind of a good start. And so anyhow, I'm walking down there. This is an exact picture, but it's in the same place. But I'm walking down with the chief, and I see these children. This is the first day. Okay, I see these children under a tree. And there was a bunch more than that. There's about 200 children under a tree. So I asked the chief, I said, "Who are these children?" And he said, "Well, they're just kind of orphans. You know, we're in a big drought here. That produces a lot of orphans. So there's orphans." And he said, "Well, why are they under the tree?" And he said, "That's where I dumped them." And I said, "You dumped all of these orphans under the tree." And here's the question he asked me. "Where would you have dumped them?" See, you know, you're saying, at first I was kind of saying, "You just dumped a bunch of kids?" His question was, "Well, got 200 orphans here. Where are you going to dump them?" And then he says, "You brought some water here. I figured this would be the best place to dump them. Maybe they'd get a drink. You keep bringing food here, maybe they'll get something to eat. So I dumped them here." So, you know what I told him he needed? He needed a school. And we're finally doing what CRF finally does well. We help sponsor children. And so I said, "We're going to start you a school here. And we're going to get these kids sponsored." And so, you know, that's what happens in places like where Randy's drilling water wells. You know, I'll come into town. If you're from a church, you ought to get me to come to your church sometime. I'll just tell stories like this and bring these. And maybe you want to drill a well. And you can sponsor all these kids. And all these kids now are going to be sponsored. There was no school in hundreds of miles from here. But now we got a little school that we're going here. We didn't build it big enough. But we all these kids, and every one of these kids right now are sponsored. And they're going to get an education. They're going to grow up going to church. They're going to grow up loving Jesus. They'll be taught every day about Jesus. There's going to be water there. There's going to be food there. And we're taking care of hundreds of these orphans. And it's just kind of a cool thing. Just where once there was a desert, it's now an oasis. 107:35 of Psalms. "But the Lord can also turn deserts into lakes and scorched land into flowing streams." But how did it start? It started with some water. And that's why it's so important, and that's why in this study that Bruce Waddick did, he concluded, if you want to really change the world in the long term, you better deal with the kids. And you better get some water. But once we got that water, just everything else, it was so easy to plant a church. I cannot believe how fast we planted a church there. You know, and all these people are going to school trying to learn all the techniques to plant a church. Man, just go drill a well someplace and you'll plant a church. You know, when I came back there, where we drilled that well, there's just this people gathered there. When I came back, there was just, it seemed like houses, every place they built. Why? Because there's water. They're going to stay there a while. And it all started with water. So, when helping helps, you can help people, you know. Like the church across there in Bernie, just helping people. I mean, decided one day, we'll do the two most effective things we can. And did it. And maybe it won't make headlines, and maybe we won't announce it at Moody Coliseum tonight, and we won't even know it. But I'll tell you what, there'll be hundreds of children that know it. So this picture here tells everything I've been saying in 2 days, probably. This kid, right when we first got there, before we got the water, I was with a guy named Jim Shelburne. Some of you may know him. He preaches at Washington Avenue Christian Church in Amarillo. So we're out there, and we're drilling that well, and we see this kid right here. And he carries a container in each hand. And the reason he carries a container in each hand is because he is desperately looking for food and water. That's what he spends his whole life doing, just wandering around. And if he finds some food, he puts it in one of the containers. If he finds some water, he puts it in the other. And that's just how he spends his whole life, just walking around with two containers, looking for food, looking for water, hoping he's going to find some. That's his whole life. And so we knew there's going to be water pretty soon because we were over there drilling. He doesn't know that yet. But Jim Shelburne, he looks down, he sees this kid, and he says, "Milt, I'm going to sponsor that kid." And so when he started our sponsorship program, he says, I don't care, he's the first kid sponsored. I'm sponsoring that kid that's walking around with those two little cups. And I said, great, because we're going to sponsor this. He said, that's my kid. And so Jim and I walked over to this. I kid you not. We walk over to this kid right here, and we get a little interpreter, and we say, what's your name? You know what his name was? Emmanuel. God with us. That's a little Emmanuel. That's the way that you want to change the world long term? Sponsor Emmanuel, you know, sponsor one of these kids, you know. Get them some water. And you know, and from the water, the dominoes are going to fall, and we'll get churches and schools and all this kind of stuff. And so you really can make a difference. And people are helping. So if you hear people are just hurting people, man, have them call me. I want to tell you some stories of how people are helping. And I know some of you in this room are helping in these very ways, and that's probably why you came to this class. But I thank you for the way that you help. Let's pray to God. God, thank you so much for the ways that you use us for your glory. And thank you for the many children and people around the world that are being helped. I'm thankful for Christian Relief Fund. I pray a blessing upon the way we're trying to help people. And I pray a blessing upon everybody in this room. And we pray that our hearts may have been touched in some way today, that we'll want to actually help more people who so desperately need some help. Thank you so much. And we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. I got a bunch of kids over here that are real kids to sponsor. If anybody doesn't have a kid, you could save a kid today. And if you do want one of them, you need to actually sign up and sponsor them. These are my only copies of these kids, so this kid would disappear if you just walk off with it. So, but if you want to sponsor a kid, I have orange Tumaini bracelets. Tumaini is the Swahili word for hope. Okay? And you're sure welcome to one of those. And I've got, if you want to a water well, or if you think maybe your church might want to buy a water well, I've got a little brochure here that'll tell you a little bit about how you can do that. Thank you.